You're tuned to Perspectives, a weekly public affairs show which airs every Sunday right here on KTEP. Good afternoon. I'm Louis Sines, your host for Perspectives, and joining us today are Drs. John Brucker and Randy Chenault, and they are here to talk about the El Paso Veterinarian Medical Association's annual banquet and also talk about some of the things that we encounter with our pets. And John and Randy, doctors, thank you very much for being with us here today. And did I mess up that acronym, or is that what it stands for? El Paso Veterinarian Medical Association.
That's pretty good, yeah. So El Paso Veterinarian Medical Association is what it stands for, which is what you said. So
okay, and as I mentioned, this is an annual event. So how long have you all been having this banquet?
This is our 29th year. Yeah, 29 years.
And in dog years, that's a lot.
That's ancient in dog years.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's kind of a nice community get-together, basically. It's not just veterinarians. There's all aspects of the animal industry that are pretty much covered. We have groomers. We have veterinarians. We have most of the staff participates that are in our hospitals.
Humane organizations.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
City.
Rescue groups, city.
Yep.
Yeah, it tries to just tie everybody together and kind of get everybody together on one night so we can all kind of have a good evening.
What is the major focus of the dinner? Is it to recognize somebody, or
absolutely,
is it just,
yeah,
as you mentioned, have a good time?
Yeah.
Or both?
Both, yeah. But we do try, and there's a community involvement award that we give out every year. This year is going to be an organization called Pets Alive, that is instrumental in helping spay and neuter a bunch of animals that are for people that may not be able to have the funds or whatever to get it done through their local veterinarian. So they provide vouchers that a lot of times will cover for the spay and or neuter vaccinations, microchipping, whatever needs to be done.
You mentioned microchipping, and this has been around now for the last, what, 5 years or so, even longer?
No, it's probably been at least 5 years. Yeah, okay. More than that, probably.
Okay. Tell us how this works and why is it necessary?
Well, I think the important thing about microchipping is it's a permanent form of identification for your pet, and the city requires it. I mean, it is a legal requirement for all pets, dogs, cats. Mainly, that's what we think about, but I think even ferrets and small animals that are vaccinated need to be microchipped for a permanent form of identification. And it's a little microchip that's implanted under the skin, like getting a shot. It's not terribly painful, although it's a big needle. I mean, thank goodness I haven't had it done. It's a big needle when you look at it. I was thinking, wow, and some of the little guys, you think this is going to be terrible, and they don't even act like they feel it. So, but all it is a series of numbers and or letters, kind of like a social security number. You know, it doesn't mean anything by itself. There's no information on this chip except for these numbers. And
it also doesn't mean anything if it's not registered. It's incredible how many times a stray will come into the clinic. You'll scan it. Yes, it's got a microchip. And then it turns out that it's not been registered with the proper owner. And you know, so you're still at square one.
Yeah, so we don't know who this dog is. It's got a microchip, and there's been a lot of instances where that happens, and that's one of the things that I know most of us hopefully now are doing is when you get a microchip, I mean, there's a mandatory in my office. It's part of the deal. We just make you fill out the form, and we send it in and take care of it and make sure that they're registered at that, you know, through our office. We send it into we happen to use Home Again, which is a national service.
We just celebrated Easter not too long ago, and a lot of them got little chickies for Easter or little rabbits or even puppies, and they're cute, but they don't realize that these things grow up.
Absolutely, yeah. They grow up, and pretty soon it's like, what do we do with this rooster in the backyard that's growing that was a cute little yellow chick at one point?
They eat and excrete, and you got to do the rest.
Kind of fill in the blanks there, right, Johnny? Is that what you're saying?
One of the things we forgot to mention is that John works at an emergency clinic, and Randy has a practice on the east side. I encourage you, if you're looking for some good vets, to go see Dr. Brucker and Dr. Chenault. But let's talk with you, John, as far as an emergency clinic. To an animal lover, anything that's wrong with their animal would be an emergency. It's almost like with a child. But what are some of the common emergencies that you see, especially around here?
Probably the most common is some sort of trauma, whether it's hit by car, dropped, you know, shutting the door. And then another big percentage are chronic illnesses that are having some sort of acute episode after the daytime clinics have closed, like a dog that's had congestive heart failure for years and is on medication and is just kind of getting out of sync and has a little crisis that will bring them into the emergency clinic. And then just anything that the owner doesn't think is right and doesn't want to wait till the morning. Probably half of what we truly see is not life-threatening, but that's why we're there, is to see any pet that you want us to see when your vet is closed.
We talk about animal abuse, and a lot of people say, oh, it's awful. So why would somebody hit an animal? Why would somebody mistreat an animal? But we also see a lot of obese dogs, and some people consider that animal abuse.
Well, it's certainly concern, but that's abusing them with love, usually.
Yeah. Right,
but
I call it killing them with kindness, right. You know, because that's kind of what you're doing, you know?
Yes.
I mean,
right. But we do it to ourselves and each other. I mean, as a species, we're not too far ahead of the dogs.
Well, speaking of that, we have a high rate of diabetics here on the border. And a lot of people aren't aware that dogs can come down with diabetes, and cats, I guess, too.
Yeah, it's definitely common. We've got two today that we're trying to regulate that, you know, I mean, we see a lot of diabetics in my practice, and I don't know why I'm the lucky guy that gets a lot of diabetics, but that's pretty common. I mean, it's more common than we think, and I don't know, most of ours are truly insulin-dependent and diabetics. I mean, there's no pill like they'd give to people. Unfortunately, it does require insulin, usually twice a day, and, you know, for the rest of their life. I mean, my mom's dog is a diabetic, and he just wasn't doing right. We checked his blood in, say, October, and about 45 days later, and it was normal at that time, 45 days later, I mean, he was in full-blown diabetes. He just wasn't feeling good, and then it showed up. He started drinking a lot of water, losing some weight, urinating in the house on accident, which he's never done. You know, and those are more common things that we see, multiple trips outside to go urinate. So, I mean, you know, it happens a lot. And, I mean, the symptoms can be kind of sneaky on a lot of cases because you see your dog every day and you may not notice that it's losing a significant amount of weight. And on a 20-pound dog, 2 pounds is 10% body weight change. That's pretty significant. And so a lot of people don't even recognize that their dog is losing weight until it's almost too late sometimes. I mean, they're getting cataracts, they're drinking a lot and having all kinds of medical issues. So,
is it common for Labradors to get cataracts and eye diseases? Someone asked that the other day.
I think as a breed, they may have a higher incidence of cataracts.
I think, you know, pretty much as what we call a senile aging change, cataracts are not terribly uncommon because dogs are living so much longer now. We're doing a better job, I think, as owners, giving them, you know, good food. We, as veterinarians, I think, are doing a better job at diagnosing things and, you know, making them live longer and better lives. And so, I mean, a lot of the aging things that used to be, we'd think, wow, you know, this dog's 10 or 11 years old. Wow, we've done great. Now it's almost like we feel cheated if they only live 10 or 11 years. So,
and El Paso does have veterinary ophthalmologist, veterinary dermatologist, veterinary surgeon that are all here in town, if not regularly, then weekly. So
for consultations and referrals. So
one of the questions that somebody has asked in the past, the last time we had you guys on, and I forgot to ask, is because it is not cheap to go see a doctor, period, and most people don't have pet insurance. Is there pet insurance available?
Yes, yeah. There is.
Yeah, it hasn't really taken off here in El Paso like in other places maybe. And I don't know, at least in my practice, I've talked to people sort of regularly when they ask. I mean, if they have questions about it, we certainly do. In many cases, the premiums that you pay on a monthly basis may be more by the time you pay for a year. I mean, it should be for catastrophic problems. I mean, for vaccinations and routine care, it's not a great deal. But you have a dog that gets hit by a car, we're treating them for cancer or a major orthopedic fracture. Or that's where that insurance is really nice to have. But, you know, I mean, I talked to a guy the other day that was – it was interesting because he hadn't been in, I don't know, a year and a half or something, and he was looking at getting insurance for his dog, and it was like $60 a month. And I said, wow, you know, that's $720 a year and you haven't been in a year and a half, I don't know that I'd roll the dice on it. You know, you're a grand into it. I'd bank the money, you know, is what I told him. And he says, well, I just don't have the discipline. So, I mean, that's kind of the other reason. That, you know, it makes somebody kind of come forward. And I think it's a good idea. And they all vary. I mean, I'm not familiar enough with all the insurance. Do you guys see much insurance?
You know, it seemed like we used to see more of it now that you were talking about it. But, yeah, I don't know. It's one of those situations where when you don't have it, you'll wish you did. And if you do have it, you'll never need it. So
yeah.
Pick your poison.
You all mentioned that at the banquet that you all are going to be having, you're going to be honoring a group, and neutering in Spain is very important, and the county certainly has been pushing that for a long time. Yet we still see a lot of stray dogs, a lot of stray cats, and in fact, in some parts of far east El Paso, we still see wild packs of dogs. So tell us a little bit about the importance of Spain and neutering.
Well, that kind of goes with what we're talking about here with the theme of our banquet. Tuesday of Pet Week, May 6th, and the theme is Celebrate a Healthy Pet, which means focus on preventative care, maintenance, vaccinations, spaying and neutering, those sorts of things, heartworm disease, all the things that we can prevent that are pretty easy to do and relatively inexpensive. That's what we want to do. And unfortunately, as you mentioned, I mean, there's a lot of people that have a misconception about the dog needs to have a litter or the dog needs to do something, you know, for whatever. It won't be right unless we go through this. And unfortunately, we have problems where breast tumors are very common in older intact females, infected uteruses, a lot of health risks that are associated with non-spayed females, testicular tumors, prostate cancer, prostate disease. We see all those things in males, too. So, I mean, kind of my rule that I tell everybody is if you're not going to breed your dog, you didn't get it for breeding, then it should be spayed or neutered just for health reasons. I mean, there's been studies that have shown spayed females, neutered males live longer, healthier lives.
It's interesting that you mentioned the cancer, and some people wonder, is cancer very common among animals?
I think it's getting a lot more. I don't know if it's getting more common or we're getting better at finding it, I think is what it is.
Both. They're living longer, so there's more time for cells to go wrong, and then people want a definitive diagnosis, or we have the ability to get a definitive diagnosis more than, you know, 20 years ago.
Doing CAT scans now is not terribly uncommon. We used to think, wow, CAT scans, you know, and that wasn't bringing the cat in to let him stand on the table and look at your dog. That was actually a machine that we would put them in now. And the cool thing about it is being able to do that, it helps us make a better judgment on what your pet needs. I mean, if it's we're going to go do an exploratory on your dog, it would be nice with ultrasound or whatever to know, is this cancer everywhere or is it in one location? So we know going in there, we may not put your dog under anesthesia and say, hey, look, you know, if the liver is full of metastatic cancer, then, you know, it's just, things like that. I mean, we're getting better at it. But yeah, I think cancer is pretty not uncommon, and it makes you kind of wonder. But I think genetics is a huge part of that, is my personal opinion.
A lot of times, and there have been studies done about this, the fact that, let's say we have a cancer patient and they have a pet, that pets contribute so much to well-being and healthcare.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly. Pets are just usually pretty non-judgmental either, which is kind of neat, you know. I mean, no matter how bad your day has been, I mean, they're always happy to see you, you know, and it kind of makes you feel better when they, at least somebody likes you, you know, kind of an attitude.
Yeah, somebody's not going to talk back or
kind of just happy to see you, man. It's just like it's really rewarding, you know.
Well, there's a reason we've been together for, what, 50,000 years or something.
Yeah.
Dogs and man.
Yeah, they domesticated. I mean, they've like way, way back. I mean,
yeah.
The nomadic tribes and stuff like that have domesticated dogs, I guess, early dogs. And even back then, I mean, dogs and people are buried together. So kind of always had a big part of being together, I think.
Tell us a little bit about perhaps Alpha, which some people we know, and they have a huge German Shepherd and a tiny little Chihuahua, and the Alpha is a Chihuahua.
Yeah, it's who wants it the most and is lucky enough that he, you know, that to not get killed in getting it, I would say.
Yeah, that's the big problem. The big dog on a little dog disease is a big problem, you know, because it takes 1 second for the shepherd to bite that chihuahua and it'd be over. But dogs don't know size. That's the other thing. They don't respect, you know, they don't have a clue as to how big something is compared to them. I mean, they think they're as big as they need to be. So I don't know. I don't know how that happens. Do you have any clue on behavior issues?
Well, no, not really. But they're highly emotional and highly physical. So between those two, the little Chihuahua that really wants to be alpha, to a certain extent, probably feels that the shepherd does not care, you know, yeah. in the situation that you're talking about. But many times we'll see the big dog, little dog that have been living together for years, never any problems. And, you know, they're getting old now. For whatever reason, the big dog just kind of cranky that day, just snaps at the little dog one time and opens his chest, and he's got a life-threatening problem at the clinic. So you got to be careful when your Chihuahua has become alpha over your German Shepherd.
Randy, there are some people who get dogs, and as we mentioned, they're cute as puppies, but then they end up tying them in the backyard or have a little dog run, but it's probably not even big enough to move around. So tell us the importance about exercising a dog, walking a dog, and how much space should a dog have?
Well, back to the kind of the diabetes and a lot of other obesity-type diseases. With proper diet and exercise, both humans and dogs could probably put their medical providers out of business. The natural dog, you know, a coyote or a wolf, you know, they'll go miles every day hunting, and really that most of that hunt is being a scavenger, eating, you know, remains of something else. And the rarely do they get to have the feast. And then here we have them, you know, we're feeding them, you know, two times a day, high nutritious diet. And they're just sitting in the backyard or sitting on the sofa or, you know, there people say, hey, my dog runs around outside, you know, three times a day, or there's a doggy door. He goes out whenever he wants. But that's not miles of searching and eating a low nutritious, high fiber diet like the coyote and the wolf. Are there not laws against tying up dogs these days?
There are. It's difficult to enforce those things. I mean, obviously, it takes someone to say, "Hey, this dog's tied up," and that's obviously its own set of deals. But as far as for your mental health, I mean, you know, people, we get stressed. One of the things we do is go to the gym and either, you know, get on the treadmill or go for a walk or do whatever, and it kind of helps clear your mind.
Or eat.
Yeah, well, or both. You know?
Read a book.
You know, dogs are the same way. I mean, you know, taking them out, you know, people talk about, oh, all this dog does is dig holes and chew things up. Well, you know, if you're stuck in the backyard with nobody kind of really giving, and even though it's a big backyard, I hear that every day, oh, my backyard's big. Well, you know, yeah, but it's still confined. I mean, he's still caged. It doesn't matter how big your backyard is. I mean, so getting them out on a leash is good for everybody. I mean, the dog, the people, and everything else. I mean, obviously, they need to be leash trained and, you know, social and that sort of thing. You don't want to go, you know. But that makes a big difference in a lot of dogs. And I see a lot of psychological issues. There's a condition called a lick granuloma, which where they sit there and they just kind of zero in on one spot and will lick and lick. It's an obsessive compulsive thing. And one of the big things that I do, I mean, they get put on Prozac, but the big thing that I do is it's not a magic pill. It won't fix the problem. You got to get them out and kind of clear their head. Exercise involvement, you know, some sort of stimulation besides sitting around licking my feet, you know, or my wrist or whatever it is. I mean, that's what they do all day because they just get just bored. And it's kind of like, you know, people that chew their nails or do whatever. It's an obsessive compulsive thing.
And they need that love.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, and that's the big thing, you know, I mean, and you know, pets are not just something of convenience, or they shouldn't be, you know, and that's unfortunately where I think a lot of things have ended up. You know, it's just like, oh, well, it's more convenient. It's Saturday afternoon. I think I'll go out there with a dog and throw the ball for 5 minutes. You know, and the dog's looking at him like, what the hell are you doing out here? You know, you don't belong out here, you know, I mean, anymore. And it's kind of one of those things. So
with the hot weather approaching, and of course, it's always hot in El Paso. Because of that, there are a lot of people who either leave their dog outside all day without the proper amount of water or put them in the car, and they go in shopping expecting to be out in 15 minutes, and the poor dog's in there not realizing that it gets so hot in that car.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. You probably see that. You'd be the guy to talk about
that?
Heat stroke. And
heat stroke and dehydration?
Yeah, more in the brachycephalic dogs. It really has, you know, that have not been really confined in a car or, you know, a place without good ventilation. But they're natural, you know, they've got the short face, small airway, like bulldogs, Boston's, pugs, you know, those dogs that even when they're normal, they're, you know, breathing like that. We'll see those that are just on a walk around the block and they are getting cyanotic, you know, the blue tongue and their temperature spikes and they're inside now and they're trying to cool them down and they're just panting, getting it hotter. And those come to the clinic every summer. But most of the dogs that were born and raised in this area, as long as they have shade, water, and ventilation, but shade and water, they can handle the heat.
And we don't get very much water here. When it starts raining here, people will look like, wow, it's time to build an ark. What about problems with mosquitoes and worms, all that stuff like that? Do we have a serious problem, especially in the Upper Valley?
We have. It's a concern. It's not like Houston, Florida.
Like the Gulf Coast, no. But
yeah,
we definitely see it. I mean, it's here. And people think, oh, I don't have mosquitoes. Well, you know, everybody gets mosquitoes at some point of the year. And if you've got mosquitoes, you've got the potential for spread of heartworm disease. There was a study that was done several years ago. The Texas Department of Health was looking for tuberculosis, back when we were having all the dairies and all the other stuff that was having the issues. And they were looking for a reservoir for tuberculosis in the environment. And one of the things they thought of was, well, maybe it's the wild canids out in the desert and everything else. And at that time, I don't know how that study turned out, but one of the guys on the study was a veterinarian. And he looked, and over half the dogs or the canids had heartworm disease. So 50% of them that are living in the wild out there in the desert, or, you know, and you think, wow, of all places, they're not going to have mosquitoes out in the desert. But, you know, I mean, if you have standing water, you have anything, and that's, you know, and it's, like I said, it's easy. You know, I mean, it's really kind of a shame to see this when it happens. I mean, and a lot of it is because people unfortunately don't know. But that's our job as veterinarians, to let them know. And that's why when they come in and, you know, celebrate a healthy pet, you know, it's kind of going to be a, that's what we're for, you know, that's what this is all about.
And like most people, you know, we usually don't think about certain things. We drive to work every day and we see billboards about funeral homes or about hospitals. But not until we need those services do we actually do some research and stuff like that. One of the things that I was going to ask, for some reason, a child gets bit by a dog, should there be a concern? Should that parent take the child to the emergency room, or does it matter if the dog has the shots or whatever?
Well, yeah, it does matter. I mean, it's not so much probably for the potential for rabies. Thank God we haven't had a domestic animal case of rabies here in, I don't know, 10 years, maybe 15 years. The last one came through the emergency center that came up from Mexico.
But it's been over 20
years. Is it 20 years? That's
how
old I'm getting. I can't remember. But anyway, yeah, it is a problem. And it's not so much for the rabies potential. I mean, yes, it is. The bigger problem is the city coming down on you for not being vaccinated, not having a microchip, you know, depending on the situation. Was your dog out? So there's a lot of, yeah, that's a big problem. And that's where part of our push, too, is to obviously make sure that people are being vaccinated. Like you talked about, nobody, you know, thinks about doing anything until the guy with the animal control suit comes on and says, hey, I want to see your vaccines, you know, going door to door. You know, and it happens. I mean, and it's not pricey. I mean, I don't know. I mean, vaccines are relatively inexpensive. You know, city license is $10. It's been $10 for as long as I can remember.
But you should take the child to a physician that's been bitten.
Absolutely.
And, you know, hopefully it's your own vaccinated dog.
Does it matter if the skin is broken or regardless?
Well,
I guess to be on the safe side, just...
If my kid, I love them both, but if their skin wasn't broken, I personally wouldn't take them.
Yeah.
But that's not the advice I would give. you know, certainly if you're concerned, take them in. And with a cat bite, it's even a little more, it's a little nastier bacteria, and people can have bad reactions. So it's a little more important with a cat.
Yeah, infection is the bigger issue, you know. Tetanus is an issue as well. I mean, everybody gets a tetanus shot whenever they've been bit. I don't know if I'd really say that. Thank God we've never seen tetanus in a long time in people either. But yeah, I mean, infection's a bigger problem to worry about, Louie, as far as if you've got certainly a bite that's, you know, broken the skin, that's a problem, you know. But, you know, I mean, common sense goes a long way, too. I mean, you know, there's a lot of bites that, you know, maybe more of a scratch. You know, somebody, you know, they say, oh, the dog bit me and it really jumped up and scratched him with his nail or something, you know, which is okay, but at the same time. And so those need to be checked. Yeah, they need to be checked. And no matter what, even if your dog's vaccinated or not and you can show proof of vaccination, if there's a bite that someone goes to the doctor.
It should be documented?
Well, it's a mandatory quarantine of the animal. There's a lot of times that I've had instances where someone was walking their dog along and another dog comes along and, you know, gets in a fight and they start a fight and the person tries to break them up and they get bit and then they have to go to the doctor and then both animals are quarantined because they don't know who really bit the guy. And, you know, there's a whole lot of things. So it's just easier to keep them vaccinated and keep them on a leash and, you know, it's just, you know, follow the rules, man. It's not that hard.
Well, let's talk about the fun stuff now as we're wrapping up the program. Tell us once again, Randy or John, about the banquet that you all are having.
Well, it'll be on May 6th down at the Camino Real. We've got a comedian who's Emmy-nominated and Grammy-winning or something like that. He's a pretty big guy out of Kansas City named Elliot Threet. I've kind of seen some of his stuff he's been on several things. He's been doing this for many, many years. And he's not just a comedian, unlike John, who is this guy does everything else. I mean, he's got several businesses and he's done a lot of other things. So it ought to be interesting. I mean, the guy is going to be here. He's normally with going to be at the comic strip that week. And so that's why we ended up lucky to get him. And so it should be pretty good. I mean, hopefully we'll have this thing, you know, to where it's going to be there's probably, 350, 400 people that most of the time show up to this. So it's a big deal. I mean, it's not just, you know, a small gathering.
How do people go about getting tickets and reservations? Is there a special number that they should call?
There are. There is a special number, and you can call. They're $40 for the ticket, and that includes your dinner. There's going to be a cash bar. The number to call is at 593-1712. That's Dr. Garza, East El Paso Animal Hospital, that's in charge of tickets. It's May 6th, like we talked about, probably get started usually between 6:30 and 7. I mean, we kind of have a little cocktail hour before or whatever, just kind of a meet and greet thing. And hopefully, you know, we can get in and get out of there and, you know, you won't be there till.
Yeah, after 29 years, we've got it down to where it's not a laborious event. You know, it's pretty click, click, click. And
kind of go through the deal pretty efficiently. There's always interesting little things that happen, but at the same time, it's always a fun night, I think. Most people have a pretty good time.
Well, thank you very much for being with us here. Again, we've been visiting with Drs. John Brooker and Randy Chenault, talking about the upcoming banquet, which is going to be taking place on May 6th. Again, if you need additional information, 593-1712. Gentlemen, thank you for being with us.
Thank you, Lou. Sir. Appreciate you having us.
Perspectives is taped and produced at the KTP Studios, University of Texas at El Paso Communication Building. Our thanks to our engineer and producer, Dennis Wu. You've been tuned to Perspectives. I'm Louis Sines.